This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
All right, welcome to NHL This Week with Illegal Curve Hockey. We hope you enjoyed the Manitoba Moose broadcast. Huge win for the Manitoba Moose.
Big W.
They beat the Texas Stars 4-3. They are 2 points back now of that last wild card spot in the Western Conference. The rematch against the Texas Stars goes Friday night at Bell MTS Place. This is a hockey show, of course. This is NHL This Week, but we got to start off by giving our condolences to the family and friends of Randy Turner. Some really sad news coming in this morning. Randy was an awesome guy, an unbelievably talented journalist. We had him on the show over the years, and when I saw that, it was really sad. So we're going to dedicate tonight's show to Randy Turner and his memory. Johnny, we're going to get into the Winnipeg Jets and the San Jose Sharks, but I almost feel like we should talk about the Manitoba Moose, who just can't really be beat at home. They've won 14 of their last 16 games at Bell MTS. Just unbelievable. But, you know, the Winnipeg Jets obviously suffer a heartbreaking loss last night at the hands of the San Jose Sharks. 4.3 seconds left. Joe Pavelski takes that nifty pass from Timo Meier and gets it past Connor Hellebuck. A game in which it seemed like the Jets were going to get at least 1 point. And obviously, the San Jose Sharks, the second game of a back-to-back, they beat the Minnesota Wild on Monday night. You had Radim Šimek goes out of the lineup. The Sharks are down to five defensemen. The Winnipeg Jets had two leads in that game. Of course, the Sharks had that early lead in the first period. Realized there were a lot of people calling into the station today that were pretty upset about the way that game went down, but whenever you have the opportunity to win a game and at least get a point and take it to overtime, you knew it wasn't going to be that bad of an effort at the very least. But let's talk about that game because there's a lot to get into. You know, starting off with the way that game ended, I realize a lot of people are focusing on that Nikolai Ehlers cross-seam pass and Tyler Myers with a bit of a unfortunate pinch. But overall, what did you think about the way the Jets played? And when you think about the last couple of games, they could have easily got a couple of points against the Washington Capitals to end that road trip. But specifically last night, what did you see from the Jets?
Listen, I mean, you can complain about that game all you want. That was a tremendous hockey game to watch.
It was.
From just a pure hockey standpoint of two excellent teams going at it. I mean, yeah, if you're a Jets fan, it's disappointing and I mean, what more can you say about Joe Pavelski? This guy is heartbreak king. I mean, two times in a row he scores the dagger at Bell MTS Place. Yesterday, I mean, what's worse, the shorthanded tally in overtime or a 2-on-1 with 4.6 seconds to go and then you score? I mean, yesterday seemed a bit more abrupt, so it kind of hurt a little bit more, especially because that point was so close and the Jets just couldn't grab it, couldn't further their lead on the Nashville Predators. Nashville, of course, losing last night as well. But I mean, you just look at some of the circumstances. I mean, the Jets only managed to shoot four pucks on net in the third period against a team that was coming off back-to-back games. I mean, down, like you said, to five defensemen. And I mean, when push comes to shove, you have the lead. You got to be able to direct more biscuits to the basket. And other than four in the third period, and we saw a little bit of frustration in the captain. We saw a little bit of soft coverage by a top D pair. I mean, was it a disappointing loss? Yes. Is the sky falling? No.
And you have to give the Sharks full credit for their effort, right?
The Sharks are very good at hockey.
They're a great team. They're one of the best teams in the NHL. They're first place in the Western Conference, first place in the Pacific Division. And even though, you know, that's an unfortunate goal and you probably lost the point. No, you did lose a point and you should have got at least 1 point in that game. The Sharks scored five goals at even strength yesterday, right? Mm-hmm. And this is a team that has hurt a lot of other teams in the league. And you know, the Jets have lost now 7 of their last 13 games. They're 6-7 over their last 13 games, 11-9-1 over their last 20 games. And since the Christmas break, they are 17-14-3. So since Christmas, this Winnipeg Jets team is now 500. And it's pretty remarkable that the Jets are still in first place in the Central Division. The Nashville Predators have had their own struggles this year, but when you look ahead to the game tomorrow night at home against the Bruins, and then the game on Saturday night against the Calgary Flames, I mean, these are must-win games for this Jets team in the sense that they really can't afford to lose too many more games before they are going to fall out of first place in the Central Division. Now, I think there's still a really good chance that they finish first just because of the fact that they have the games in hand and they've been in first for the majority of the season. But, you know, you look at those numbers, they have been a 500 team for the last 2.5 months. And obviously, you still have 13 games left in the regular season and you have an opportunity to get this right. But I think there are some signs that this team does have maybe a few more warts than we originally thought. And yes, this team misses Dustin Byfuglien and they miss Josh Morrissey. And, you know, Buff's going to be back in the lineup hopefully in the next week. Morrissey's going to be later. He'll be back in the lineup.
You think he's back in a week?
He could be, I should say. I mean, it looks like he could be, but he's probably going to be back before Morrissey, right?
I don't know. To me, when you hear that he's having trouble pushing off on his skates, that's a little bit concerning. However, we don't know. We haven't been provided a timetable. At least with Morrissey, they kind of provided a bit of a timetable that you can aim to. Byfuglien, this is so up in the air. You know, he's leaving the trip. He's on the trip. He's in the pool. He's out of the pool. Who knows where Buff is, but like I said, no timetable for return concerning, but maybe it's a silver lining.
But, Shawnee, you're right, though. I mean, if it is a high ankle sprain, which it's believed that it is, he could be out of the lineup another 3 or 4 weeks. And that is a problem if he doesn't get into any regular season action. But, you know, back to that game last night against the Sharks, I really liked what that fourth line did. Mm-hmm. I mean, Andrew Kopp, I thought that was maybe his best game of the entire year. Picked up a really nice goal to get the ball rolling for the Jets on that really nice deflection. He also had an assist. He had 4 shots on net. So, pardon me, Matty Perreault had the goal and an assist. Andrew Kopp just had the one goal. He had no assist. But, you know, Jack Roslovic didn't play much. I think he was just over 8 minutes of ice time. But you're really starting to see how effective that line of Perreault, Kopp, and Roslovic can be for Paul Maurice. And when you're talking about some of the other lines, didn't necessarily think that that was Scheifele, Wheeler, and Lyonnais' best night. I'm not saying that they had a bad game, but I think they were quite overshadowed by the Sharks. And getting back to what we talked about before, Shawnee, when you look at those three centers that they're able to put out there, you know, Logan Couture, Thomas Hertl, Joe Thornton, that third line of Marcus Sorensen, Thornton, and Kevin LeBanc, that's one of the best third lines in the entire NHL. Obviously, Sorensen, you know, got the big goal, and Thornton picked up an assist and now is 14th all-time in the NHL, passing, obviously, a legend in Stan Mikita. But I thought the Sharks and the amount of weapons that they have and the amount of depth that they have. I mean, you're talking about a team that didn't have Erik Karlsson and didn't have Evander Kane. So you can say that the Jets didn't have Morrissey and Buff, but the Sharks didn't have one of their best defensemen and one of their most dangerous scorers, and it was the second game of a back-to-back. So I realize that it's a heartbreaking loss, and a lot of Jets fans left the Bell MTS Place and were watching it on TV and, you know, at least wanted 1 point out of that game. But this Sharks team is a bona fide Stanley Cup contender. We don't know if they're going to win the Stanley Cup, but this team is very dangerous, and I wouldn't be shocked if they go all the way this year. You know, we saw it back in 2016 when they went to the Stanley Cup final against the Pittsburgh Penguins, and when you're talking about Jumbo Joe, he doesn't have that Stanley Cup ring, so you know that he wants that. And, you know, we also saw some Jets players today after practice were still pretty upset by the loss last night. I wanted to play Connor Hellebuck, who was visibly upset during practice. This is what Hellebuck had to say to the assembled media after practice today.
A little emotion this morning. What brings that on when that happens at a practice? When you just get worked up and get a couple get by you and this sticks times?
Well, I don't like getting scored on. That's period, you know. And I don't like losing games, so letting a little anger shows a little emotion, show that I care.
Does that carry over from last night?
Not necessarily. It's more I got beat on couple shots, and I don't like that.
What was your feeling? We didn't talk to you after your last night. What was the feeling on overall your performance and the way that the team responded?
Well, it's tough to judge because it was kind of a kick in the nuts, losing 3 seconds left. And, you know, it's hard to swallow. I think one of those games you just got to bottle it up and throw it away because, you know, that's not going to happen very often, and we don't want that to linger.
That was Connor Hellebuck today after practice earlier this morning.
He's a gem.
And, you know, Hellebuck let in 5 goals, and I realized there were a lot of Jets fans that were getting on him a little bit, and he's obviously, you know, not had the same season he had last year when he was a runner-up for the Vezina Trophy to Pekka Rinne. But you look at those five goals that were scored last night. The first goal, Mark-Edward Vlasic, that's a rebound. He follows up his own shot. And, you know, Gustav Nyquist had a couple of nice goals. Marcus Sorensen had a nice goal. Obviously, the Joe Pavelski goal, that's not on Connor Hellebuyck. You tell me how many of those five goals were strictly on Hellebuyck as opposed to the result of turnovers or the result of poor defensive coverage.
Well, I think there was definitely some soft defensive coverage yesterday. I mean, it wasn't a great night for the eight lines for Trouba and Beaulieu. I mean, there's some soft coverage in the D zone, some gap controls. We've heard that phrase a lot coming out of the Jets that just weren't there. And usually you can get away with a few of those mistakes, but with a team as talented as the San Jose Sharks, I mean, we saw the way the Sharks were able to knife their way into the middle of the ice. I mean, some slick hands by Tomas Hertl or Logan Couture, guys that are almost magic with the puck at some point. I mean, they were able to take advantage of some missteps and some miscues by the Winnipeg Jets. And you talked about Gustav Nyquist. I mean, picked up at the trade deadline. Here's a guy who's showing his impact for his new club. I mean, you talk about pressure on the Jets, Ezzie, to perform in the postseason. Look at San Jose. What do you think these guys feel year after year, disappointment after disappointment? I mean, Jets fans believe that, you know, something is owed to them. Well, what about San Jose Shark fans?
Well, and they're playing for first in the Pacific Division, first in the West, right? Mm-hmm. Whoever wins the Pacific Division is going to finish first in the West, right? And they're only 1 point up on the Calgary Flames, and the Flames won big last night against the New Jersey Devils, but the Sharks have a lot at stake here. Mm-hmm. They want to finish first, not only in that division, but they want to finish first in the Western Conference. Finishing first right now would mean playing the Arizona Coyotes.
Well, we've talked about this on the show so many times, especially in the Pacific. You want to finish first because you don't want to play Calgary or Vegas.
Well, that's exactly it. So the Sharks, without Erik Karlsson, without Evander Kane, they've won six games in a row, and it doesn't matter that they're in the second game of a back-to-back. This Sharks team is a veteran team. We know that. Much older than the Winnipeg Jets. Mm-hmm. And for anybody to think that the Jets were the favorite going into that game, obviously they have not been watching the Sharks of late, and they're one of the hottest teams in the league. And like we said, it's wide open once the playoffs start, but this Sharks team has to be considered a serious Stanley Cup contender right there with the Jets, with the Flames, with the Predators, you know, with the Lightning and the Caps in the East. But a really impressive victory last night by the Sharks. Obviously a game in which the Jets thought they were going to get that 1 point, but Joe Pavelski crushes the Jets' dreams with 4.3 seconds left. We're going to head to break now. When we come back, we're going to be joined by Jeff Baker of the Seattle Times. We know that Seattle has an NHL team coming in the 2021-22 season. We're going to catch up with Jeff in Seattle and talk about some of the most recent developments there. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the O'Legal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Good afternoon, everyone. Today is an exciting day for the National Hockey League. I am delighted to announce that this morning, the Board of Governors unanimously approved a plan of expansion that will bring a National Hockey League team to Seattle, Washington, to play beginning in the 2021-2022 season.
We're back. Welcome to a late night edition of NHL This Week on TSN 1290 Radio. Ezra Ginsberg and Sean Assor. Drew Mandel is away from the program this week. He's somewhere much, much hotter than Winnipeg. He'll be back next week. This segment of the show is brought to you by Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all of your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com. Let's hit the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline. We're pleased to be joined by Jeff Baker of the Seattle Times. Jeff, good evening, and thanks very much for joining us.
Hey, no problem. Glad to be on.
Jeff, we have to start off by congratulating you. You were recently officially named the new NHL writer for the Seattle Times, so mazel tov.
Oh, thank you very much. You know, it's been a long time coming. I feel like I've been doing this job already for the last 3 years, so it's kind of a, unofficial announcement. You know, we got to pop a bottle of champagne, so that was nice.
Yeah, maybe we'll pop that bottle of champagne after the show, but we're going to have to hold on for that for at least another hour and a half. On Monday, Jeff, you wrote about the Seattle NHL group and how it plans to open a season ticket and suites preview center in early April, and how they're going to honor longtime Seattle Totem star Guile Fielder. For those who don't know who Guile Fielder is, can you explain to our listeners why he's so important to hockey in Seattle?
Well, I mean, back in the old days, prehistoric, before everything was on video and before everything was on television, they had something called the American Hockey League, which is pretty much as good as, and they had other leagues too, like the Western Hockey League, which was a minor pro league like the AHL. And a lot of players in those leagues were just as good as the NHL players, but there's only six teams. And so Guile Fielder was a Detroit Red Wings farmhand. He was also with the Bruins for a bit, but he only ended up playing about 16 games total in the NHL. But he also played for about, I think it was 22, 23 seasons of minor professional hockey. And by the time he was done racking up the points in all his professional aspects, he was the fourth leading point getter of all time and the all-time minor league point getter. And ended up playing for Seattle, for the Seattle Totems. And they ended up winning three championships with him as captain of the team. You know, and he gets a lot of respect. I've talked to a lot of former NHL players, guys, names that you would know. Who remember Guile Fielder from playing, and he was a very good pool player, still is at age 88, a very competitive guy right now, even at 88. And, you know, back in those days, Seattle didn't really have major professional sports. And so, you know, they had the Washington Huskies football team, which was huge back in the 50s, 60s. And so between them and the Seattle Totems, that was pretty much it for professional sports in this town. I mean, it wasn't until the 70s that they ended up getting the Mariners and the Seahawks and everything. So those guys were larger than life back then for what passed for sports in the city back then. A lot of it's been forgotten over the last 40 years, but yeah, you know, now that there's a lot of interest being rekindled in hockey, you're hearing a lot more about the exploits of these guys.
Yeah, and just keeping with that theme, it's pretty cool that they're making a replica of the stall that he used to sit in, and even to go one step further, Jeff, that Fielder is actually bringing some of his old memorabilia to kind of include in the memorial there, or the stall,
yeah,
I should say.
Yeah, they asked him for a bunch of his old stuff, so he told me he's got a Guile Fielder customized stick with his name on it. He's got his original Totems jersey. He's got a bunch of other equipment that he can bring in. He's got a whole bunch of trophies that he won. He's won the scoring title several times. He was a multiple time, I think, 9-time All-Star, something like that. I've lost count. Might have been a 12-time All-Star. But, I mean, he was a big deal, and he collected about all the hardware you can collect. They finally just gave him the trophy to keep. And so he's got that. He could bring that up. They're trying to figure out how they want to do this. Like, right now, they're looking to do it as a private ceremony just for the suites buyers, because they're only opening the preview center for the people who are going to buy suites right now. The season ticket holders and everything, they're going to have to wait until the fall when they announce the tickets and pricing for that. Right now, they're just running the suites people through, but they're expecting to do some kind of ceremony at the thing, you know, by invitation to those people, the sponsors and the people who are going to buy the suites.
We're joined by Jeff Baker of the Seattle Times on NHL This Week on TSN Radio 1290. Jeff, where are we at in Seattle with Seattle's search for their next general manager, their first general manager?
Well, they're still in the discussion stage right now with ownership. They're mulling over a few options that they have. They met this week. Nothing conclusive has come out of that yet. They're waiting to see what happens on the landscape. Right now, I would say, you know, a lot's going to be decided in the next, you know, going by reading the tea leaves, a lot's going to be decided with what happens in Edmonton. You know, and you can look, Edmonton wants to hire a general manager, we're told, on the short term. And so if that is to happen, you know, some names could be taken off the list. One name in particular that I would pay close attention to is Kelly McCrimmon, the assistant GM of the Vegas Golden Knights. He's the hot commodity right now in the NHL, and that's a guy that I can guarantee you the Seattle hockey team is going to be taking a very close look at. The question is he going to be on the market? You know, are they going to try to snatch him away to Edmonton in the next, you know, few weeks or not? So we'll see what happens. I would say that if they don't, and if he's out there come June, come July, everything I'm hearing is that he's going to wait until June or July before he can actually do interviews. Then I would see Seattle jumping in to get him this year. But if he's off the market come this spring, you know, I don't know. Seattle could decide to hold their cards and wait and see if anybody else comes on the market over the next year. So I would say it's worth keeping an eye on that situation.
Yeah, you know, that's an interesting thought, Jeff. I never really thought of that. Just, you know, as Seattle kind of plans to hire, and, you know, I know there's word that they've asked for the hiring process to be pushed forward to the summer rather than next year. But, you know, now the Edmonton Oilers searching, you know, I guess that kind of throws, I don't want to say a wrench in the screws, but, you know, it may be a bit of a hindrance as how they can narrow down the GM that they're looking for, because Edmonton also searching for a general manager.
Yeah, I mean, it's like every situation. The number, the amount of competition you have is what's going to drive the market. The other situation to keep an eye on is what happens in Detroit. So, you know, like even hypothetically, let's say Kelly McCrimmon's off the market in 2 weeks. Let's say he goes to Edmonton, they throw a truckload of cash on him, and he says, yeah, I can't refuse this, and Vegas lets him go. And you know, all bets are off. But then, you know, what happens in Detroit? You know, are the Red Wings going to hold on to Ken Holland for another year? Are they going to hold on to him longer than that? Is Steve Yzerman going to want to wait it out, sit on the sidelines and wait to see if he can get that job there? Or are they going to push Ken Holland aside and just put Yzerman in there right now? I mean, a lot of stuff's in flux, you know. I mean, is Yzerman going to be on the market? Everybody assumes he's going to Detroit. But, you know, the Red Wings haven't really made that clear yet. And Ken Holland's given a lot to that organization. It's going to be interesting to see how they decide to finesse that. Because I know Seattle would have a lot of interest in Steve Yzerman, naturally, if he was going to be on the open market, not specifically anchored to staying in Detroit, because he worked with Todd Lywicki, the president and CEO of the NHL Seattle Group in Tampa. I mean, they built the Lightning together. So, you know, he would be a natural first choice for, I think, the majority of organizations in the National Hockey League. So, you know, that's a situation worth keeping an eye on. I think the idea still is that Yzerman's going to eventually take over the GM job in Detroit, but nobody's really come out and said that yet. And if that doesn't happen this year, let's say they decide to let Holland finish his tenure in Detroit, you know, is Yzerman going to be patient enough to wait around and see what happens and how that unfolds? I mean, that's a situation worth keeping an eye on too, because that's going to change the entire scenario of how that position gets approached by not only Seattle, but by other teams that might be in the market for GMs as well. I mean, this might go from being, you know, this might go from being an off season where you've got a huge stock of candidates to being, you know, one that's very thin in candidates, and it might be worth waiting another year for it to unfold. Especially if you're Seattle and you can afford to wait for another year. You know, they're still 2.5 years out.
We're joined by Jeff Baker of the Seattle Times on NHL This Week on TSN Radio 1290. Earlier this week, Jeff, you reported that the NHL Seattle Group won't finalize plans for an American Hockey League farm team, until after its next quarterly business meeting in June. Do we know yet if the plan is to have their AHL team in Seattle or in the state of Washington, or is it too early to know where that AHL team is going to be located?
From everything I've been told, it's going to be outside of the state of Washington, definitely. They've narrowed it down to a handful of locations, and so they're in the process of figuring that out right now. But it's not going to be in the state of Washington. It's definitely going to be outside.
Jeff, can you talk about what Seattle NHL advisor Dave Tippett has been doing? He was hired last summer, but, you know, for those of us who are curious about what he's doing, because the NHL doesn't start until, of course, the 2021-22 season. So what is Dave Tippett doing most days?
He's doing everything, basically. So, you know, the way it works is Todd Lywicki is everywhere here, because Todd Lywicki's a really well-liked executive all over the sports world. And, you know, he just rubs people the right way, and he's everywhere. And you know, he's been a longtime hockey fan, but he's like me. He's a longtime hockey fan, you know. So when he goes into a board meeting and has to try to sell the team owners on certain concepts and certain ideas, you know, he's not always the right guy to be doing it from an expertise level. So that's where Dave Tippett comes in, because Dave Tippett has lived and breathed hockey from the inside, not just as a fan, but as a coach, as a player. You know, he knows the game. He knows the people in it. So if they're brainstorming for ideas and they say, hey, how can we make this work? Dave Tippett can sit up there, a light bulb will go off of his head, and he'll go, hey, let me call two guys that I know because I used to play with these guys. Or let me go call these guys, and I'll make a trip over to their arena to see how their operations work. So that he's been doing a lot of that, like a consultant's job. He goes in, and when they need to build their training center, he'll go around, use his connections to go get inside and see how the operations work at all these arenas around the NHL, all these practice facilities. So that when it comes to building the one here, they'll know what to use and what not to use and what worked and what didn't work. And he's been doing that primarily this entire time. He's still got a lot of his competitive juices going. So I think he misses the coaching part of it a little bit on that front. But I think at the end of the day, he's also grateful that he You know, it doesn't necessarily have to wake up at 4 a.m. And go over X's and O's on a chalkboard or on an iPad these days. I think he likes that part of it now.
Jeff, going forward, getting closer to the 2021-2022 season, is the belief that Dave Tippett is going to stay in that senior advisor to the owner, senior advisor to the general manager, or is it possible that he might have a different title in hockey operations?
I think they're trying to figure out his title right now. I asked that very question a few days ago to somebody in a position to know what's going to happen, and I was told that they're still working it out. They're not exactly sure what his title is going to be. They're trying to come up with the right name so that it does it justice. And I think part of the issue is they're still trying to figure out how everything's going to work. I mean, they really haven't made a hockey operations hire other than Dave Tippett just yet. And so I think, you know, a few other things are going to have to fall in place. They're going to have to see who the GM is going to be, how he wants to work with some of the people around him. You know, maybe he's a senior advisor to the general manager. Who knows? But that's, you know, they're going to be up to the general manager to decide as well. So I think once they hire the general manager, and I still believe it's going to be this summer, because I don't believe Kelly McCrimmon's going to go to Edmonton in the next couple of weeks. I think he's going to be out there, and I think Seattle's going to make a big push for him. But once that happens, a lot of other dominoes are going to fall into place.
Jeff, I'm curious, just from a fan base and from Seattle in general, I mean, have you noticed an increase in the interest and maybe curiosity of the sport of hockey?
It's funny, you know, I wrote about my hockey card collection in the paper not too long ago. I actually tracked down some old guys whose names a lot of people had never heard of, and I said, I wonder who these guys are and where they came from. The guys from the 70s, I actually went and found them and told the story about how they're in my hockey card collection. That's how I knew their faces. But I ended up getting back into hockey card collecting the last month or two because of the story. And so I went to the guy here DJ Sports Cards out in Kent, the suburb of Kent here in Seattle. He's very big into the hockey card stuff and selling, buying, selling, and trading them. And I was asking him, and he said the interest has picked up way beyond anything he expected since they announced the hockey team interest in hockey card collecting. Remember, this is Seattle. It's football country. It's baseball card country. Hockey, not so much. And he said he's astonished at the interest that he's seen in the hockey card market pick up since that's happened. So I think that's a good barometer right there, because if people are willing to buy and sell hockey cards, you know that they do have some interest in the game of hockey locally, beyond just hearsay, beyond just word of mouth. I think I'm sensing that there's a real void here for winter sports ever since the Sonics left, and I think people have moved here from other parts of the country in the last 10 years since the Sonics basketball team left, and I think between those two factors, you're going to have a real hunger for a winter sport, and this is the winter sport that's coming in 2.5 years.
Jeff Baker is the NHL writer and columnist for the Seattle Times. Jeff, even though Seattle doesn't begin their NHL, they don't start in the NHL until 2021-22, it's always great catching up with you and finding out the latest news with Seattle's NHL expansion team, the NHL's 32nd franchise. So thanks so much for joining us tonight.
No problem. Hopefully I won't be retirement age by the time they actually play a game here. But I think I'm going to finesse that a little bit.
Oh, no. You have at least 15 more years left.
Yeah. Don't tell that to my wife. She's asking when I'm going to go cover a game. She wants to get rid of me. So, all right. Thanks, guys.
Thanks a lot, Jeff. All right, let's head to break. When we come back, I'm going to ask the question to Sean Assor. Which RFA would you rather sign? Braden Point or Mitch Marner? They were talking about it on TSN.ca earlier this week. Craig Button and Mike Johnson were debating it. I know who I would sign if I was a general manager. I'm going to wait until after the break to tell you. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the O'Legal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN 1290.ca.
Point slips inside on Little. Cuts it. Scott! Win it overtime, 4-3. The winning goal at the 36-second mark.
Braden Point's been so close all game long. He's had some great scoring chances. He wasn't going to miss this one.
Welcome back to NHL This Week, late night edition, post Manitoba Moose game day edition. This segment of the show is brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and the team at Linden Market Dental Center. Dr. Rikus and his team provide modern and comprehensive dental care for the whole family. To make an appointment today, visit LindenMarketDentalCenter.com. All right, Shawnee, this segment, We're going to talk about something that was talked about earlier this week up on TSN.ca. Craig Button and Mike Johnson were debating, if you were an NHL general manager, which RFA would you rather sign? So obviously, you know, this isn't Julien Brisebois and this isn't Kyle Dubas. We know that both of those general managers are going to sign these RFAs, but pretending like you were a general manager who had the option to sign an RFA, it's basically who you think is a better player, but also you have to factor in your team's cap situation. So before Shawnee and I debate, because I think Sean and I might have a different opinion here, let's play Craig Button and Mike Johnson from earlier this week up on TSN.ca talking about Braden Point and Mitch Marner.
No question that goals are hard. So we have two players that are very different in terms of their skill set. Point, a better goal scorer. Mitch Marner, a better setup guy. So when we try to factor that in and compare apples to apples as best we can, I'm going to use primary points. 69 primary points, and that's goals and a play that directly leads to a goal, as opposed to 61 points for Braden Point. So when we try to even it out, I think it takes away that argument that the center is always more valuable than the winger in this case.
We can't ignore last year, though, Craig, where Braden Point was significantly better than Mitch Marner in both goals and points when it came to even strength points, producing 5-on-5 as well as 5-on-4. He has shown himself this year to be one of the best trigger men with 19 power play goals on the year, something that Mitch Marner can't even come close to just yet.
Here's what I would say. Dead even in points. You have 39% of Braden points on the power play, 22% of Mitch Marner's points on the power play. 80% of the game is played at even strength, and that can be considered the harder part of the game. And that's where Mitch Marner shows that he's able to contribute at a greater rate than Braden Point. And I'm not trying to diminish the power play. All I'm trying to say is Mitch Marner as a winger is every bit as good and maybe even a little bit better than the centerman in this case.
And the other part of the game, we love talking about offense, but there is the defensive factor. And I think Braden Point has shown the trust that John Cooper has in him last year and this year, comparing him to Patrice Bergeron and Anže Kopitar and a future Selke winner at center. I'm not sure if Mitch Marner is just there with Mike Babcock.
Oh, yeah, he is. He's killing penalties. Braden Point isn't this year. And Braden Point is out there at the last minute of the game protecting leads, everything that goes with it. So is Mitch Marner. So he has the favor of Mike Babcock.
All right, Shawnee, you heard the analysts, Craig Button, Mike Johnson, debating Braden Point versus Mitchell Marner. Which RFA would you rather have? Before I get Shawnee's hot take here, let's go over the numbers this year. First off, Braden Point, center for the Tampa Bay Lightning, 68 games played, 37 goals, 83 points, 46 assists. He's a plus 24 with 19 power play goals and 6 game winners. Mitch Marner, 69 games played, 24 goals, 58 assists, 82 points. So Braden Point, 83, Mitch Marner, 82. Marner has 4 game winning goals compared to Braden Point's 6 game winning goals. Marner's only got the 3 power play goals. Obviously, he's got more assists than that compared to Point's 19 power play goals. So, Sean, Braden Point, Mitch Marner, both of these players are going to get big time dough after the season is over. Who are you taking if you're an NHL general manager, factoring in how much money they're going to get and your team's cap situation? Who's it going to be, Point or Marner?
I mean, it's the classic debate. Do you take the playmaker or do you take the goal-scoring center? I mean, traditionally, you aim towards the goal-scoring center. I mean, I don't think anyone expected Braden Point to explode offensively. I mean, the guy is absolutely money in the slot when he gets those bump passes. He can fire him in like the best of them. 19 power play goals. That's so impressive. However, and I love Braden Point. I've seen him a few times this year play live. He's absolutely beyond impressive, the development of him, but I kind of lean to Mitch Marner right now. He's one of the most fun players to watch in the NHL. The way he sees the ice, you know, you talk about those elite skilled guys and how they can slow a game down and facilitate and make his line mates better. I mean, it seems like the NHL is trending towards the style of game that Mitch Marner plays, and we haven't really seen Braden Point struggle. He's playing with the elitist of elite of offensive players, Nikita Kucherov, right now, so maybe a little bit of attention gets deflected towards Kucherov, allowing him a little more free time. I know Marner has some pretty darn good line mates as well, but I gotta go with Mitchell.
Marner at plus 24 is really impressive because
hopefully he's not making 12 million AAV like general manager Marchand.
Well, he could get 10, right? And we have no idea.
Easy.
I don't think that he's going to get any less than $9 million a year. I don't think he's going to get $11 million a year like Austin Matthews, right? But when you're talking about Mitch Marner, you're right. I mean, when we talk about his 84 points, he's easily going to hit 90 points. He might get close to 100 points the way he can pile up the points, but you're talking about one of the best playmakers, and I don't think that anybody necessarily saw this explosion coming from Mitch Marner. I think we expected it out of Austin Matthews. Mm-hmm. I think we expected Matthews to be around, you know, 90 to 95 points, maybe even 100 points. And I think it's really interesting, and I'm going to give you my answer here in a second, but when you talk about these two players and their trajectory, Marner, you're talking about a fourth overall pick, right? He goes fourth overall after Connor McDavid, Jack Eichel, and Dylan Strome in 2015. Braden Point, third rounder.
Well,
and
he
comes into the NHL and he has a decent rookie year. I think he had 18 goals in his rookie year, but the expectations for Braden Point were not as high for Mitch Marner. Mitch Marner, you know, was projected to be a 70, 75, 80 point player. Don't necessarily know that anybody saw him as a 90 to 100 point player. Obviously, you know, some scouts did, and that's why he was a fourth overall pick. But I'll tell you why.
Mark Hunter the guy that pushed for Marner? The former Leafs assistant GM, wasn't that like
right? London Knights, yeah, the Hunters, Mark Hunter and Dale Hunter. Mm-hmm. And when you're talking about, you know, Mitch Marner, I think you could make a strong argument. You're right. I mean, Marner's going to put up the bigger offensive numbers. Certainly the assist totals are going to be much higher. Braden Point most likely is going to score more goals throughout his NHL career, but Marner's got 24 goals. But this is why I'm taking Braden Point if I'm an NHL general manager, because we know that center is arguably the most important position in hockey. Obviously, goaltending is important as well, but up the middle, you know, you look at the teams that have won the Stanley Cups over the years. You know, Evgeny Malkin and Sidney Crosby for the Penguins, Nicholas Backstrom and Evgeny Kuznetsov. When you have a 1-2 punch like the Tampa Bay Lightning do. And for me, Braden Point, what stands out the most to me is how good of a defensive forward he is.
He's unbelievable.
And Mitch Marner isn't a slouch defensively as well. But Braden Point, I don't think, you know, if you haven't watched him a lot, and you mentioned, Sean, we've watched him a couple of times this year, Jets versus the Tampa Bay Lightning. But Braden Point is an all-around player. And it's not that tips the favor, because I think you're talking about center versus winger. It's apples versus oranges. You're talking about a goal scorer more so versus a playmaker, even though both of these guys can set up plays as well. I think you're really more so for me. The reason why I think Braden Point is going to be more difficult, but also less difficult to sign, because we know that Austin Matthews' new contract kicks in next year, but we also know that Kasperi Kapanen needs a new contract, and William Nylander, his contract is going to be in the second year. The Tampa Bay Lightning are going to build their team around Braden Point, Victor Hedman, Steven Stamkos, Nikita Kucherov, Andrei Vasilevsky, and the Toronto Maple Leafs have the ability to put out other players. I think that with the exception of, you know, Mitch Marner and Austin Matthews, they're still able to put out extremely talented players, but each player is just as valuable. But I'm taking Braden Point simply because of his position, how tough a position that is, and the fact that they can slot him in as the number one or number two center for the next, 10 to 12 years. So both unbelievably talented players. Obviously, you know, just a fun exercise. I saw that Craig Button and Mike Johnson were talking about it on TSN.ca and just thought it would be interesting to talk about it on a Wednesday night, because in addition to Patrick Laine, Kyle Connor, you know, Mikko Rantanen, Sebastian Aho, and a whole list of others, Mitch Marner and Braden Point, two players that are in their early 20s, two guys that are going to get hefty raises from what they're making this year, and two guys that might face each other either in the first round, no, it won't be the first round, pardon me, the Leafs will play the Bruins, but could face each other in the second round of the playoffs this year, and you know, could face each other many times over the years in the playoffs. Two of the most dynamic offensive players in the league. We're going to head to break now. When we come back, we're going to be joined by Dennis Bernstein of the Fourth Period. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the O'Legal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN 1290.ca.
So the newest king, game number one for Carl Grundstrom. Congratulations to him for that. We'll see if he can get accustomed to his new line mates, teammates. Make it happen. Great pass from Dowdy down low. And they score! Grundstrom in game number one has tied it with his first NHL goal.
Welcome back to NHL This Week on TSN Radio 1290. It's Ezra Ginsberg and Sean Assor. Drew Mandel is away from the show this week. When it's 10:50 at night on a Wednesday night, you go to LA where it's only 8:50 at night. So let's hit the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline and talk to Dennis Bernstein.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
Dennis Bernstein of thefourthperiod.com, thanks so much for joining us on the show tonight.
Great to be with you, boys. Let's do it.
Okay, Dennis, we got to start off here with the Anaheim Ducks. They've won four of their last six games, including last night winning 3-2 over the Nashville Predators. I don't think there have ever been this many Winnipeggers that have been hoping for the Anaheim Ducks. They also beat the Montreal Canadiens 8-2 last night. Obviously, the Ducks are not making the playoffs this year, and they've got a back-to-back coming up on the road on Thursday and Friday against Arizona and Colorado. But how fun is it to watch this Ducks team who's winning games and just playing the role of spoiler?
Well, it's better than the torture of those 19 out of 21 losses a few weeks back. Yeah. Hey, look, here's the difference in this team. They've integrated their young talent, right? They put in Sam Steele. They put in Max Jones. They put in Troy Terry. And this team just had new energy. They were an old, slow team. And I'm sure it's a recurring theme around the league about you got to get younger and quicker. That's why this team's a better watch at this point in time. It's not even the veterans. Like, Getzlaf really hasn't played great. Rickard Rakell's been MIA all season. It's been these three young kids that really have galvanized this team and have made them play much, much better. So they're easier to watch with respect to the last few games. And again, the pressure's off this team. There's absolutely no pressure where you have other teams like Nashville, Montreal. Montreal's fighting for the playoff, but Nashville's just fighting for first place. So I think there's absolutely no pressure. They've relaxed, and now they're just playing for fun out there. And like I said, when you put kids in a lineup, it's just an easier watch now.
Dennis, you're, of course, based in California, and we just had a California-based team here in Winnipeg. A lot of disappointing Jets fans. I know you saw the finish to that game, Joe Pavelski scoring his 37th goal of the season with 4.3 seconds left. We were obviously talking about that game earlier in the show, but is there any reason to believe that the Sharks aren't the Stanley Cup favorite in the Western Conference right now?
Well, it depends on one guy, Martin Jones. So I'll defer to say that. Here's what I think the Western Conference is. I call it the blanket conference. I really believe that you could throw a blanket over the top three teams in both the Pacific and Central, and you can argue they can get to the Cup final. I think there's a path to them. And even St. Louis, even though they haven't played well here in the last 10 games, I really don't know, because you could say San Jose, but if San Jose falls to second, Calgary beats them for the first seed in the Pacific, they could lose to Vegas. Especially if Marc-Andre Fleury outplays Martin Jones, which could definitely happen. So I don't really know, to be honest with you. I want to see how these teams play down the stretch in the last five or six games. I want to see what kind of injuries pop up. I don't have a prohibitive favorite, unlike in the East where you have Tampa Bay. So I think it's going to come down to who's going to be more clutch in a big spot, and certainly the goaltending. And you see there's flaws in all these teams. You know, I'll be honest with you guys, and you guys in Winnipeg, the 117-point team and 114-point team that was in the Central Division last season in Winnipeg and Nashville, they're not around anymore. And these teams are not as good as they were last year. They're significantly worse, to be honest with you. So I think it's really a toss-up. Again, I think any of these six teams could emerge and get to the Cup final, just depending on how hot they get in the postseason.
Dennis, back to your previous point about, you know, the integration of youth into into the Ducks roster. I mean, how many excited eyes are focused on Troy Terry right now as the season, you know, comes to a conclusion? Especially, you know, he's starting to showcase a little bit of his skill and speed, and, you know, getting the recognition from the league, being named the third star of the week this past Monday.
Yeah, I think it's great. I think absolutely he's responded as they hoped he would, and this team really needed it, right? Because you have the veterans like Getzlaf and Perry and Kessler, all with no movement clauses, all making a ton of money. Like, if you don't have these kids coming up, Ezra, and making, you know, on entry-level contracts and contributing, you're going to have a really bad team for a really long time. I still don't know how Bob Murray's going to extricate himself from those contracts. I don't see how anybody, like, I'll give you an example, like Corey Perry has a family, lives in Newport Beach. Like, you think he's going to be agreed to be traded to Raleigh, North Carolina next season? I don't see it. These guys have no movement clauses. They're locked into Southern California where the weather's good. That's going to be the challenge. So if these kids don't come through, it's going to be a long process. But the one thing about Bob Murray, and I've been really critical of Bob, you know, throughout the season with respect to not changing the coach fast enough, these new movement costs he has,
this organization can find young talent. They always seem to find young talent. Either they deal it for picks or they keep them. I mean, look at all the defensemen they've traded here over the last couple of weeks, right? Marcus Pedersen's doing a good job in Pittsburgh. Brandon Montour is doing well as well. So they have the ability to do that. That's the one saving grace for this team. So while these veterans are still getting older, and I think they're going to contribute less and less, they can find the Troy Terrys. They can find the Max Joses. They can find the Maxime Comtois. And I think that's the one thing that augurs well for this team, that could they bounce back next season? Yeah, if these kids continue to contribute, it's great that they're getting a taste right now, Ezra, that they can come in here and play 30, 40 games of NHL hockey and then be able to come into next training camp saying they're already really like veterans. Like, they won't be newcomers coming into the next season. So that's the one saving grace for this team, is that these youngsters are coming in and producing and getting familiar with what it's like to play four games in 5 nights against big defensemen, against speedier and better competition. So that's the one good thing coming out of Anaheim right now, is the integration of these young kids and then getting experience for next season.
No, Dennis, that last question was actually Sean. I should correct you there. You can call Sean Ezra, and you could call me Sean if you want, but it's my fault because last time you were on, I was sick, and I wasn't able to be on the show, and Drew was on the show. So there's three of us, so it's easy to be confused. But we're joined by Dennis Bernstein, senior writer for The Fourth Period and host of Off the Rush on Sirius XM NHL Network, Channel 91. You know, and I wanted to go back to something that you talked about a little bit earlier, Dennis, talking about, you know, the 117-point Nashville Predators, the 114-point Winnipeg Jets. And that's something we've talked about a lot all year. The Jets certainly don't look like the dominant team that they were at times last year. Same thing goes for the Predators. In your opinion, why do you think that is? Because it's essentially the same team in Winnipeg, and it's essentially the same team in Nashville. There's obviously been some changes. You know, you could sub in Kevin Hayes for Paul Stastny, and when you're talking about Nashville, you know, you could sub in, you know, Wayne Simmonds and Brian Boyle, a couple of players that they didn't have last year. But for the most part, it's the same two cores in Nashville and Winnipeg. So is the Central Division better, or can you put your finger on why these two teams just don't look as good as they did heading into the playoffs last year?
Well, maybe they understand that 117 points and 114 points don't get you jack going into the playoffs. And maybe, that's the only thing I can think of, is that there's less importance on this race for the first seed in the Central and first place in the Central, because it doesn't really matter. I think when you look at this, you have to rest players more. I think there's underperforming players as well. I when you look at Nashville, that's the one team I'm really concerned about, to be honest with you, because I don't think they have enough offense. Even adding Wayne Simmonds, who hasn't really done anything since he got to Nashville, I think he's one assist in six games. I just don't think Nashville is powerful enough offensively to be a 117-point team. I think Winnipeg's good enough defensively, to be honest with you. You know, you watched the game last night. You shouldn't be giving up a 2-on-1 on the last shift of the game to lose a game. That was a really bitter loss for them last night. So I just think there's more deficiencies on these teams, and I think it's also a mental aspect. I think last year, when they faced teams, I think they threw their gloves and sticks on the ice and knew they were going to win games. This year, I think there's a little bit more doubt, and I think it makes for better competition. I think it makes it, you know, it gives the teams like Calgary and San Jose more hope. I just think that there's more flaws in these teams than there were last season. They're not as strong, and maybe they're soft-pedaling it. Maybe they're looking at a team like Washington, who I think's been laying in the weeds for 60 games, all of a sudden they wake up, win seven straight. So I think they realize that it really doesn't matter where you finish. It's how you start in the playoffs, I think that's part of the issue. But to be frank, I just don't think, when you look at their records, they're as good as they were last season.
Dennis, I'm curious. The Ducks and the Kings play each other two more times before the season's end. I mean, what is the level of intensity expected when these two teams meet? Because you have to assume that maybe, you know, the tank isn't the word I want to use, but, you know, some pretty premier prospects on the line in the draft coming up, and you kind of, not only do they not want their counterpart in California to get these prospects, but, you know, points are at a premium, but, you know, you kind of want to be at the bottom so the lottery balls can kind of shift in your favor.
Well, I think the Kings have clearly have an edge on this. They're 7 points behind the Ducks. Look, guys, I watched that game on Sunday between the Kings and the Ducks, and I needed three Red Bulls to get through it. It was so boring. It was terrible. I mean, it's bad hockey. It was just bad. I mean, the Ducks didn't show up for a half hour. It wound up being 3-2, right? So I don't think they look at that, because both these teams need more than one player. Mm-hmm. As good as the rankings are, as if Jack uses a maybe he's not a generational player, but he's a dynamic player. Kako looks to be a difference maker as well. I don't think you can look at saying, okay, if we dump these games and we get one guy in the draft, one kid in the draft, it's going to make a difference in this team. It'll help both these teams. I don't think they look at that. I just think that a lot of the veterans, to be frank, have just cashed out, and they care they're counting the calendar down, and they're just waiting for the season to end. There's nothing to play for at this point in time. They're trying not to get hurt. Do I think that they play with the heart and passion that they did when they were going for division titles or playoffs last season? No. I think some of these guys have mailed it in, to be honest with you. And so those games are inconsequential, and I think you'll see that they'll be inconsequential. There won't be, there wasn't any heat in the building in Anaheim. I don't think there'll be any in Los Angeles in a week from Saturday. So I think they'll just be pedestrian games of two teams playing out the string, to be honest with you.
Dennis, last night the Dallas Stars picked up a huge 2-0 win over the Buffalo Sabres. Third straight shutout for Ben Bishop. You know, Brian Boucher was tweeting yesterday that he's getting a little bit nervous that maybe his shutout record is in danger. And obviously the Arizona Coyotes also picked up a huge 3-1 win over the Blues. Right now the Stars and the Coyotes, as you know, have those last two wildcard spots. But when you look at the four teams that are competing for those last two wildcard spots, the Stars, the Coyotes, the Minnesota Wild, and the Colorado Avalanche, and you consider the strength of schedule, the Minnesota Wild obviously have the toughest schedule coming up, and the Arizona Coyotes and the Colorado Avalanche have an easier schedule. How do you see this race for those last two wild card spots playing out? Obviously, it's wide open right now, but you know, if you had to put your money down on two of those four teams, which two teams would that be?
You know, the funny thing is that at the top, you know, we talk about offense and talent and scoring. Like, Dallas and Arizona doing it on defense. They're not scoring either. They don't score a lot of goals. And you mentioned Bishop. Darcy Kuemper has been great for them. The way I see finishing is, and you mentioned the schedule, so let's go there, right? Minnesota, the last eight games or last nine games, all against playoff competition right now, playoff qualifiers. And the same, Colorado, I won't consider them as well because they're missing Landeskog. And again, five of the last six are against playoff competition and legit competition. Vegas, Arizona, they go to St. Louis, they go to San Jose, they play your guys again. I look at Arizona and I see they play four playoff teams out of the last 12 games. Then they're playing Anaheim, Edmonton. They go on a road trip east, but and they do play Tampa, but they play Florida and New Jersey and the Islanders. So I think the way it's going to remain the way it is, and not for nothing, I think Dallas could pass St. Louis. Because St. Louis isn't really playing that well, and Dallas is playing much better defensively, so they could sneak in for the third seed. So I think the top eight, the way it's constituted right now, because you mentioned, I just look at that strength and schedule for Minnesota and Colorado, and I'm saying, wow, they're going to need a huge move to do this, and I don't have faith in either team, to be honest with you. So I like it the way the top eight is now. I think Arizona and Dallas would finish 1-2 in the wild card. Maybe Dallas gets to the three seed, but I think you're looking at the top eight right now as the teams that enter the postseason.
Dennis, quickly, last one for you here. I'm just curious, were you able to get a reaction or anyone able to get a reaction out of Ducks captain Ryan Getzlaff on his, well, shall we say, creative bobblehead?
No, nobody, they'd be all tight-lipped about the bobbleheads. No, it's, you know what? They just want to go home for the summer and play.
Yeah.
To be honest with you.
Yeah, it's pretty funny. The way the season has gone, I think you're right, Dennis. I think the Ducks are ready to just enjoy the off season and refresh and get ready for next year. Dennis Bernstein is a senior writer for thefourthperiod.com. He's also host of Off the Rush on Sirius XM NHL Network Channel 91. Dennis, thanks so much for joining us tonight and enjoy the games as we head into the postseason.
Ezra and Sean, appreciate you bringing me on the Illegal Carpet. It's always great talking to you.
All right. Have a good night, Dennis. Let's head to break. When we come back, what are we talking about, Sean? I think we're going to talk about Evgeny Malkin, who hit 1,000 career regular season points.
Quite the milestone.
And we're going to talk about whether or not he's always going to be overshadowed by Alex Ovechkin, who, of course, was taken number one overall in 2004, right before him at number two, and Sidney Crosby was taken number one in 2005, and who's also had a pretty good career. So we're going to talk about Geno Malkin next. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN1290.ca.
Beat all the way across by Malkin. Pettersson holding. Kessel past his stick. Malkin for Schultz to drive. Save a rebound. Score! Phil Kessel! And the assist to Evgeny Malkin. It's 1,000 points for one of the greatest players in NHL history, Evgeny Malkin.
Geno Malkin, 1,000 career regular season points last night against the Washington Capitals. I thought it was hilarious, Shawnee, that Malkin picked up his 1,000th career point with Alex Ovechkin in the penalty box. Obviously, Ovechkin picked up his 1,200th career NHL point. Welcome back to NHL This Week with Illegal Curve on TSN Radio 1290. We're talking about Malkin, and I think it has to be brought up on a night in which Malkin becomes Mr. 1000, and he's probably going to end up with, what, 1,500 points by the time his career is over, something like that, 1,400, 1,500, 1,600. He's probably got 5 or 6 years at least of really good hockey in him. Whenever I think about Evgeny Malkin, Sean, I think about how he's always overshadowed by not only Sidney Crosby, but Alex Ovechkin. And that's why I bring that up in a year in which Malkin hasn't had the best year. He's got a terrible plus minus, actually the worst plus minus on the Pittsburgh Penguins. I think he's at minus 23 or something like that. He didn't have an even strength goal in the entire month of November. A lot of Penguins fans have been pretty hard on Malkin, even though he's still at over a point per game this year. But when you look at Malkin's career and what he's done, he's won the Hart Trophy and he's won the Conn Smythe. That was back in 2009. But you look, his points per game average is 1.178 over his career. And he's second to only Crosby among active players. Ovechkin is obviously number three. But when you look at what Malkin has done in the regular season and in the playoffs, to me, that's what is truly incredible about Evgeny Malkin. 158 playoff games. He's got 62 goals and 103 assists for 165 points. We know he's got the 3 Stanley Cup rings, and he could add to that by the time his career is over. But when you look at Malkin's career, and even the last 2 or 3 years, Ovechkin getting his first Stanley Cup and the Penguins repeating as Stanley Cup champions, and then the Capitals, of course, winning last year. But is he always going to be overshadowed by Crosby and Ovechkin? And is it possible to not be overshadowed when you're talking about, you know, two of the greatest players of all time? All three of these guys are going to the Hockey Hall of Fame, Sean. I mean, just put them in there now. I mean, they're just padding their stats now. These are three of the best players in the last 15 years. But when you look at Malkin, does he get enough credit, I guess is what I'm asking, for how good of a hockey player he is? Because with the exception of Sidney Crosby, you could argue that he's been the best NHL player over the last, what are we talking about here, 12 or 13 years?
Yeah, I mean, there's no one's debating the quality of hockey player Evgeny Malkin is. I mean, he's got size, speed, hands, skill up the wazoo. I mean, he's a 3-time Cup winner. He's a Calder Trophy winner. He's a Lester Pearson winner. He's a Conn Smythe winner. He's a 3-time All-Star. He won the Hart in 2011-12. He's a 2-time Art Ross scorer. I mean, this guy can do it all. He can pass. He can shoot. He doesn't shy away from the physicality. He maybe isn't the most popular player because he's not as forefront on the cameras. You know, there was the language barrier.
It was nice to see Malkin's parents at the game cheering him on yesterday,
yeah,
as well.
You know,
they're often at Penguins games.
And good for them, you know, cheering on their son. I mean, if I was as talented as Evgeny Malkin, my parents would follow me around everywhere cheering me on, but that's not the case. Regardless, I mean, is it tough to be overshadowed by Sidney Crosby? No, because the guy's a media darling, right? He's as marketable gets. So maybe in Pittsburgh, and when you're trying to market a sport to the United States, yeah, I'm sure, you know, he does get a bit overshadowed, but we don't know how he's maybe marketed to Russian markets overseas. You know, I'm 100% sure that just based on character alone, that Alex Ovechkin gets a little more popularity and a little more camera time than him. Like, he doesn't have the personality, maybe, and we don't see, you know, the real side to the guy, but I'm just saying based on the media, he doesn't really put himself out there. So maybe just personally, just the way he goes and acts off the ice, he's not as marketable. Maybe that's why he's overshadowed. I mean, Ovi obviously loves the spotlight. Crosby's the golden boy that can, you know, do the Tim Hortons and the Scotiabank and all that stuff, right? But when it comes down to their on-ice play, you cannot debate that Evgeny Malkin is unbelievably talented, even just as much, maybe not as much, but he's up there with Crosby and Ovechkin for sure.
And, Shawnee, you remember back a couple of years when they came out with the 100 best players of all time, and Evgeny Malkin was not on that list.
I was going to say, wasn't he snubbed?
He was snubbed, and obviously Sidney Crosby and Alex Ovechkin were on that list, and Malkin should have been on that list. Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, those lists you take with a grain of salt. But when you're talking about, you know, Ovechkin versus Malkin specifically, because Ovechkin, as we mentioned, hit 1,200 career points yesterday. Malkin hit 1,000 career points. But what I think is truly fascinating, for the top two picks of that 2004 NHL draft, Ovechkin has played over 300 more regular season games. And I think that's something that has to be factored in. It seems like Malkin, throughout his career, I think, if I'm not mistaken, he's only had two full NHL regular seasons.
Really?
It's either two or three. It seems like he misses at least 10 games. You know, he's missed as much as 25 games if you remember a few years back. So when you talk about two players that came into the league at the same time and the fact that Malkin has played 300 plus less games, I think it's like 330 less games than Ovechkin. Ovechkin has remarkably been healthy. I mean, Ovechkin just doesn't, speaking of playing full seasons, almost every single year Ovechkin has played a full season. So I think that is something that factors in, that Malkin has had these, you know, 10, 15, 20 game stretches in season where he's missed games. Obviously, Crosby's missed a lot of hockey. Mm-hmm. Over the last few years, he's been healthy.
But his career was over.
Right. He's had the concussion issues and all that. So you have to factor that in. You're listening to NHL This Week, by the way, on A Legal Curve, with A Legal Curve on TSN Radio 1290. Coming up, we've got Ryan Wallace to talk about the Vegas Golden Knights. I just think it's a fascinating debate and conversation because I think when you look back at this era, most people are going to say Sidney Crosby and Alex Ovechkin, and now you've got some other superstars like Connor McDavid and Auston Matthews. But when you're talking about, you know, these years, 2005 to 2020, 2025, Crosby and Ovechkin are going to be talked about as the two best players, and Malkin is most likely always going to be number three, but he's probably the best number three that you're ever going to see, because when you average, you know, 1.1 game, points per game over the regular season, and then in the playoffs, you still average well over a point a game. And all of his accomplishments, we talked about it, you know, the Stanley Cups, the All-Star appearances, the Hart trophies, all of that. It just seems like to me he's always going to be overshadowed by Ovi and Sidney Crosby, and it's probably just the way it's going to be. Let's head to break now, Shawnee. When we come back, we're going to be joined by Ryan Wallace, host of the Vegas Golden Knights Insider Show. You're listening to NHL This Week on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the O'Legal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
We're back on NHL This Week on TSN Radio 1290. Ezra Ginsberg and Sean Assor, Drew Mandel away from the program. He'll be back next week. This segment of the show is brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. Bernstein's is proudly family-owned and operated and has been serving quality homemade food since 1985. For freshly made and fresh frozen foods delivered right to your door, visit shopbernsteins.com. Let's hit the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
We're pleased to be joined by Ryan Wallace. He's host of the Vegas Golden Knights Insider Show and pre- and post-game on Fox Sports Las Vegas. Ryan, good night. Good evening, I should say, and thanks for joining us.
Hey, this is still pretty early for me. It's late for you guys, but thanks for having me on. I love these spots that I get to do with you.
Well, you know, Ryan, when we're on after the Manitoba Moose games, we're on at 10 o'clock here, Winnipeg time, and we have to hit the West Coast for all of our guests, right? Because everybody in the Central and Eastern time zones, everybody's in bed.
Yeah, you know, that's what I love so much about being out on the West, because I just consume so much hockey. It's ridiculous. I feel really badly for everybody on the East Coast, but then again, not so much.
Hey, Ryan, the Golden Knights' six-game winning streak was snapped on Sunday. They lost 6-3 to the Calgary Flames, and you know the Golden Knights haven't played since Sunday. Their next game is Friday at Dallas, and then they've got that back-to-back at home against Edmonton on Sunday. Then they play on the road against the San Jose Sharks. The Winnipeg Jets are in Vegas to play the Golden Knights next Thursday. But you look at the following week, they've got the St. Louis Blues, the Colorado Avalanche, and then they've got the San Jose Sharks again, and then they've got the Minnesota Wild. I mean, this tough schedule coming up, is this good for a team that knows they're not going to finish first in the Pacific Division and they're locked into third there, and it's just a question of whether they're going to play Calgary or San Jose in the first round?
Yeah, I think it's good for a number of reasons. One, they get a little bit of a chance to rest up right now this week. And I talked to Gerard Gallant a couple of days ago. He feels like this break is really going to do them some good heading into that stretch. We know how much hockey Marc-Andre Fleury has played. The fact that he can kind of get away from the rink for a couple of days, maintain his focus, be as sharp as he's been down the stretch, I think will help. But certainly you want to get right back into it. You want to get back into the swing of things on Friday, and then you're really going to be playing, what, every other day, get just about, give or take, with a couple of back-to-backs.
Ryan, you there?
Yeah, can you hear me, guys?
Yeah, we can hear you now. There was just a few moments there where we lost you. So go ahead.
So yes.
Yeah, I think Ryan, we lost you there. We're going to call you back. Ryan Wallace, host of the Vegas Golden Knights Insider Show and pre- and post-game on Fox Sports Las Vegas. Just a little bit of a poor connection there. So we're going to reconnect with Ryan Wallace. You know, the Golden Knights, we mentioned at the top with Ryan, their six-game winning streak was snapped. And pretty interesting, I think, and a lot of parallels to the Atlantic Division in the Eastern Conference, where you have the Toronto Maple Leafs and the Boston Bruins locked in at number 2 and 3. They know that they're not catching the Tampa Bay Lightning. Same thing goes for the Pacific Division, where the Las Vegas Golden Knights know that they're not winning the division this year, and there's no chance that they can catch the San Jose Sharks or the Calgary Flames. Right now, the Sharks with 94 points and the Flames with 93 points. The Vegas Golden Knights currently sit at 81 points. I think we got Ryan back on the line.
Hey, guys, can you hear me now?
Yeah, crystal clear.
Okay, fantastic. Just kind of getting back to that question, I think the schedule for the Golden Knights in the last stretch of the season is going to be nice to get them used to playing every other night, especially against quality competition. It should serve them well come playoff time, because you've really got to get yourself into that groove. And you mentioned it. This is a team that's not going to finish first or second. They're pretty much locked in the third. So they know that they're not going to be starting at home. They know where they're going to be. I think it's a good stretch for the Golden Knights.
Ryan, I'm curious, how much were Vegas fans and media, and I'm sure the coaching staff, just holding their breath when Marc-Andre Fleury just casually skated out and pretended to drop his stick and look at David Riddick and somewhat challenge to I put in the air quotations, fight?
Well, if you talk to Marc-Andre Fleury after the game, he kind of wanted to go. I mean, as much as he says he wants to go, we all know that that wouldn't be prudent, especially with his concussion history. But I can tell you, watching that whole skirmish unfold, all I could think of was how awesome a first-round matchup between the Golden Knights and the Calgary Flames would be. You've got so much animosity there, especially because of that game. David Riddick skating out to his blue line, Marc-Andre Fleury half challenging him, half having a joke about it. But I think that there's a lot of bad blood between those two teams. I do think that it's two teams that don't necessarily like each other, and I'd like to see what can manifest over a 7-game series.
We're joined by Ryan Wallace on Twitter at Ryan Hockey Guy. I still think that's one of the best Twitter handles I've ever seen. Ryan's the host of the Vegas Golden Knights Insider Show and Golden Knights pre- and post-game on Fox Sports 98.9 FM and 1340 AM. And, you know, Ryan, we have to ask you about Mark Stone, Winnipeg-based hockey show. He's from Winnipeg. And, you know, anybody can look at his stats with the Golden Knights and they can see that he's got 2 goals and 5 points in 7 games. But what kind of impact has Stone had? Is the biggest impact that he's had making that second line with Max Pacioretty and Paul Stastny just that more dangerous?
Well, it's kind of twofold. With Mark Stone, I think it's the most inspired hockey that we've seen Max Pacioretty play since Mark Stone has been in the lineup. Max Pacioretty seems to be getting the puck in more dangerous areas. He's been playing a little bit better on the walls. He's been better when it comes to individual battles. He just seems to be rejuvenated. And then there's the trickle-down effect of having Mark Stone, Paul Stastny, and Max Pacioretty on a line. Other teams are looking to shut that line down, and by default, that's allowing William Karlsson, Riley Smith, and Jonathan Marchessault to see lesser competition, lesser matchups, and they've been playing much better since the addition of Mark Stone. And it also goes a little step further. You bring Alex Tuch and his ability to forecheck and really push defense back to the third line with Cody Eakin. Now, if they could just get healthy and they could get maybe Eric Halla back for that third line, you're talking about a very, very deep top nine.
Yeah, it's funny, Ryan, because I was literally just going to ask you how the you know, the insertion of Mark Stone has helped a guy like Alex Tuch, you know, maybe provide a little bit more of a matchup. But can you just maybe talk about his level of play and where he's taken it to this season? I'm talking about Alex Tuch.
Yeah, Tuck's been great. I mean, he started off the season injured, and he comes back from his injury. He's playing on the second line. Paul Stastny's hurt. So you have a second line to start the season for the Golden Knights of Alex Tuch, Max Pacioretty, and Cody Eakin. And they were really, really good for a long time. Alex Tuch has taken his game to that next level over the course of his last 12 to 15 games. He just hasn't been able to find the back of the net, but the forecheck is still there. He's a little bit shaky when he's carrying the puck in through the neutral zone. Sometimes he'd do better just to get pucks in deep and allow his physicality to kind of take over hockey games down low. But for the most part, I think with a player like Cody Eakin, more of a north-south, get pucks in deep, really try to cycle down low, that has benefited Alex Tuch in the last 7 or 8 games. He's looked like a rejuvenated player. And if he can get going and you've got that depth top to bottom, that's when the Golden Knights are really at their best.
We're joined by Ryan Wallace on NHL This Week on TSN Radio 1290. And Ryan, you mentioned Cody Eakin a couple of times there, and he's obviously from Winnipeg as well. So let's keep the Winnipeg-born hockey questions going here. On that third line, he's got 17 goals now, 35 points. And, you know, his goal totals are certainly up from last year, and he's playing a key role. What are the differences that you've seen from Eakin from last year to this year? Is it just that he's getting more opportunity under Gerard Gallant this year?
Yeah, I think it's kind of twofold. It's the fact that he was playing up with Pacioretty and Alex Tuch during the Paul Stastny injury. I certainly think that that helped. He picked up a lot of his points, a lot of his goals during that stretch. But more so with Cody Eakin, I feel like he's really just solidified that third line. And you've got the opportunity to affect the game in so many different ways. He can kill penalties. He's really solid 5-on-5, obviously. But he just seems more sure of himself in the offensive zone. He isn't deferring as much as he did last year. This year, he really seems to be, if he's got an opportunity to take the puck to the net, he's going to do it. There's just more decisiveness in his game in the offensive zone. That's really the main difference that I've seen.
Ryan, I was kind of surprised to see a 19 in the goals department for a William Karlsson. I mean, everyone knows about his stellar shooting percentage last year and whether it was maintainable. And is you think Karlsson's, is disappointed the right word, or did he think entering the season that the 40s will continue to be scored, or is this a guy who maybe had a little bit more realistic expectations as he entered the season?
Yeah, when you talk to William Karlsson in the off season right before the season, I don't think that he anticipated scoring 43 or 40 or even 35. I thought he just approached this season as, I'm going to prove myself as a 200-foot player. I'm going to prove myself as a top-line center. And that's what he was really focused on. With this team in general, with Gerard Gallant and what he preaches, it's not so much about the goals and the assists and the point totals. It's about playing the right way with the puck, managing the puck, making sure you're taking care of your own end. Now, you could argue that Karlsson, Marchessault, and Riley Smith haven't done that job because they were the far and away leaders in plus-minus last year. It's not necessarily been the case this year. But with William Karlsson, to me right now, he seems like a guy that's pressing offensively, but he's still really good defensively. He's still putting in minutes on the penalty kill. He's still helping out your power play. He's still doing all those little things that make him one of those really solid two-way centers. So I like his overall game, but of course you'd like to see after 43 goals him fall somewhere in that 28 to 32 goal range, and that just doesn't seem like it's going to happen this year.
Ryan, Marc-Andre Fleury is having an incredible season, just like he did last year. We don't have to tell you that, or we certainly don't have to tell any team in the Western Conference that. He obviously was fantastic against the Winnipeg Jets in the West Final. He's got 34 wins. With 12 games left in the season, how many times do you expect to see Marc-Andre Fleury? He's already started 58 games, so is Malcolm Subban going to get more than 3 or 4 starts? Because Fleury has started 4 of the last 5 games.
Yeah, that's kind of the big question surrounding Vegas right now, is what to do with Malcolm Subban, because it feels like every time Malcolm Subban gets a start, at least his last two, he's allowed 4 and 5 goals, 5 and 6 goals. So it's tough, I think, for the Golden Knights to really push forward with playing Malcolm Subban more over the final stretch. However, I do believe they need to. I would like to see Malcolm Subban of the next 12 maybe start 5 games, but I don't know how realistic that's going to be. Marc-Andre Fleury got some time to rest after the All-Star break during the bye week. He's had a couple of instances here and there where he's gotten a couple of games off here and there. And all indications are Marc-Andre Fleury is feeling really good. He's not worn down. He's not tired. And he wants to play as much as possible. So it's really difficult to argue with a guy on what his preparation should be over the final 12 games in order to be sharp for the playoffs. But if it's me and I'm running things as far as goaltending goes, I think I find a way to get Malcolm Subban into at least 4 or 5 more games.
Ryan, a number that really sticks out to me is 6.9 average minutes per game of penalties taken for the Vegas Golden Knights. That's third best in the NHL. You talked about, you know, in your previous couple answers about playing the right way for Gerard Gallant. And, you know, Winnipeggers, no surprise here that the speed and intensity at which Vegas plays is hard to handle. But from a Vegas perspective, does that speed maybe translate into less penalties taken because you know you're not taking those quote-unquote lazy penalties, the hookings, the holdings, the slashings from not moving your feet?
Yeah, I think so. I think that's definitely a fair assessment, mainly because if you're playing Golden Knights hockey, and as cliche as that sounds, if you're moving your feet, if you're trying to get pucks in deep and you're really trying to push teams back with the forecheck, you're not going to put yourself into really dangerous situations unless you make the wrong read, unless you're just not giving all of that effort going forward in your skating. So the Golden Knights don't take a ton of penalties. I think that they get under opponents' skin quite a bit because of their forecheck, because of that tenacity, because of their speed. But yeah, I mean, I think that's absolutely fair. As long as you're moving your feet, you're going to get ice time. As long as you're playing that way, you're going to get ice time. And Gerard Gallant's no stranger to sitting guys if they're not playing the right way, if they're taking really, really bad penalties and not moving their feet. So I think that's just kind of one of those structure things that the Golden Knights do really, really well, and it's very frustrating for opponents to handle.
Ryan Wallace is the host of the Vegas Golden Knights Insider Show and Golden Knights pre- and postgame on Fox Sports 98.9 FM and 1340 AM, and he's a good friend of the show, and follow him on Twitter. I'm still going to say it, one of the best Twitter handles out there, at Ryan Hockey Guy. Ryan, thanks so much for joining us tonight, and we'll talk to you soon.
All right, thanks, guys.
All right, take care, Ryan. We're going to head to break now. When we come back, we're going to talk about the Edmonton Oilers. They've been playing a little bit better as of late, although the game just ended and the final score is not good if you're an Oilers fan. The New Jersey Devils have defeated the Edmonton Oilers 6-3. We're going to talk about the Oilers and their search for a general manager. Is it going to be Keith Gretzky or is it going to be somebody else? It's probably going to be a while before we find out. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the O'Legal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN 1290.ca.
And we know now we're 5-0 with a game at hand, which is, that's doable. That's more than doable if we continue at this pace. But we got to continue at this pace. And, you know, we're playing the same team as the Rangers we're playing on Wednesday. They play the same press-up game. They play the same pressure game. They force you in all kinds of mistakes. It's a high-energy hockey club. It's the same game. I mean, when those two played each other a couple of days ago, it was an absolute track meet, and we just got to be ready for that. But we're 5-0 with a game in hand. That's doable if we keep playing at this pace.
I love Hitch, but I don't know if it's doable. The Edmonton Oilers game just ended. They lost 6-3 tonight to the New Jersey Devils, and you know their chances of getting one of those last wild card spots in the Western Conference is not looking good right now. They needed to win that game tonight against the Devils, and even though their chances were already slim, they're even more slim now after tonight's loss. Welcome back to NHL This Week on TSN Radio 1290. Ezra Ginsberg and Sean Assor. We've got a couple of segments left here. This segment, we're going to talk about the Oilers' search for a general manager. Right now, Keith Gretzky, interim general manager, after Peter Chiarelli was fired, Keith Gretzky took over. And right now, the search is pretty quiet, Sean. And, you know, you hear some names out there, and one of the names that you've heard a lot is Kelly McCrimmon, but you've also heard Kelly McCrimmon linked to the Seattle franchise. Yeah, we talked to Jeff Baker last hour about their search for a general manager. We're expecting the Seattle NHL franchise to name their general manager, Mark Hunter, obviously with the London Knights organization. The Hockey Canada announcement that Mark Hunter was going to be involved with the junior team. So now people are saying that, you know, Mark Hunter isn't a front runner. I wanted to play Jonathan Willis of the Athletic Edmonton, was on TSN 1260 Edmonton on Monday, and he was talking about the Oilers' search for a general manager and where he thinks that's going right now.
You know, it's dangerous to form too firm an opinion about their GM search, just because most of it's happening behind closed doors, right? And the things that we see might be misleading. They might not give us an accurate picture. So it's a pretty big caveat there. But with that caveat in place, it certainly looks like they're picking a lot of people from Bob Nicholson's Rolodex, and they're picking a lot of people specifically with scouting backgrounds. And that's good in the sense that you definitely want to get a bunch of people with good scouting backgrounds in the room and consider them as candidates. But I don't think it's the only vein you want to tap. And if you're looking for creative ideas on handling Edmonton's cap situation, even on the development side of things, it seems to me you'd be well served to bring in people with that specific background, as opposed to people who've done a good job at the draft, even though, you know, that player assessment is very important.
That's Jonathan Willis of the Athletic Edmonton on TSN 1260 Edmonton, talking about the Edmonton Oilers and their search for their general manager. And Jonathan Willis is a great writer, and he's covered the Oilers for a long time. In today's column for theathletic.com, he talked about why Keith Gretzky deserves to be a strong contender for general manager. And he talks about his track record over the last couple of years. And I think what's holding a lot of people back in terms of whether or not they believe that Keith Gretzky should be the general manager of the Oilers on a permanent basis as opposed to an interim basis is that he was hired shortly after Wayne Gretzky was hired in his business role by the Oilers franchise. Keith Gretzky was brought in. Previously, he was with the Boston Bruins organization and then the Arizona Coyotes organization in amateur scouting. And some people have pointed to that 2015 draft that Keith Gretzky was in charge of. And we know that the Bruins had those three picks and they didn't take Kyle Connor. They didn't take Matt Barzal. Obviously, Jake DeBrusk was one of those picks, and Jake DeBrusk has turned into, you know, a very solid hockey player. But Sean, when you're talking about the Oilers and where they're headed, they've won four of their last six games. Obviously, they lost the game tonight, but they were starting to creep back into the playoff discussion. But looking big picture, this is a team that's missed the playoffs 11 of the last 12 years.
It's crazy to
I mean,
think about.
They've had the season from hell this year. If you're the Oilers, do you have a problem? I guess not if you're the Oilers, but do you have a problem if Keith Gretzky is named the permanent general manager, or do you have to look outside of the organization right now and at the very least bring in someone as president of hockey operations under Bob Nicholson, and then obviously ahead of whoever the general manager, whoever that is, if that is Keith Gretzky? But do you think the Oilers have to be looking outside of the organization for their next general manager or their next president of hockey operations?
It's an interesting question. I mean, injecting some new blood and some new life and some new outlooks into the team could be beneficial, but some really interesting points as just doing some research for the segment. I mean, first of all, Keith Gretzky is already on the payroll, so you wouldn't have to add an additional salary if you were to hire him as the GM. This is where it gets kind of interesting for me. It's a really important time coming up for the franchise right now, right? With free agency and, more importantly, I think the draft upcoming, right? So the Oilers are trying to change the identity of their team from like the big lumbering slow players to the speed and the skill. And you look at some of the selections that Keith Gretzky has made for the Oilers. I mean, the Kailer Yamamoto, some speedier, smaller players that they drafted into the lineup. But I mean, you have to know your needs and your wants when these huge, crucial decisions are going to be made. And right now, a guy like Keith Gretzky, I think he could be beneficial to the Oilers because he's been around the scouting departments for so long. He's scouted three different organizations, as you were talking about, for 20-plus years. This is a guy with a scouting background. And I feel that it could be of benefit to help the Oilers as he has a more familiarity with the organization. But like I opened with, I mean, maybe injecting some new life into the organization. Listen, they should have beat the Binghamton Devils tonight. That's for sure. They didn't. I was going to say the Albany River Rats, because I thought that was the AHL farm club of the Devils. But I mean,
let's be honest, the Oilers were already out of it, but you're right. They had a bit of hope, right? They had won four of their last five games, and you're playing one of the worst teams in the entire league, even though they're my favorite team. They are one of the worst teams in the league, the Devils, and you lose 6-3. That's just unacceptable. And even if the Oilers got into the playoffs, if they're playing the Sharks or the Flames in the first round, does anybody think the Oilers are doing anything in the playoffs?
Nope.
And further to your point, I agree with you. And you know, that's why I mentioned Jonathan Willis. We played the clip, TSN 1260 Edmonton, earlier this week, and the article that he wrote today for The Athletic. And he talks a lot about, you know, the recency bias, because he was only hired by the Oilers in the summer of 2016. We talked about it. That's when Wayne Gretzky was also hired in his role. And you have to look at his record just in that span. Sure, he was around for the Jordan Eberle trade, but how much of that trade was him versus how much of that trade was Peter Chiarelli?
Exactly.
The Taylor Hall for Adam Larson trade, that was before Keith Gretzky came on. And we mentioned that 2015 draft where a lot of people look at those picks. You know, Zach Senyshyn hasn't been tearing it up in the NHL. But Jonathan Willis points out David Pastrnak, we mentioned Jake DeBrus, Charlie McAvoy, Brandon Carlo, Danton Heinen, and Anders Bjork. All of these players were drafted while Keith Gretzky was an amateur scout with the Boston Bruins. So his track record as a scout is really good. But the main point of Willis's article is that even if you're looking at his track record and all of his successes, it's going to be really tough to convince Oilers fans that you're not just going back to the old boys club if you keep Keith Gretzky as your general manager. And that's why Willis and other media members and other people in the hockey community have been talking about the need for the Oilers to go outside of the organization. Keith Gretzky, I think everyone agrees, should remain part of the organization, whether that's an assistant general manager or whatever his position is. But I think when you're talking about who is going to be your permanent general manager to right this ship and get this on the right track, because when you have Connor McDavid, Leon Draisaitl, Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, you have three excellent players, but you really just don't have the supporting cast around him. I think everybody knows that there's a lot of important decisions to be made. Are you going to buy out a player like Milan Lucic? A lot of people think that Milan Lucic should be bought out after this year because they just couldn't trade his contract. And there's a lot of decisions to be made. I mean, they really don't have a number one goaltender right now. I don't care what you tell me. Mikko Koskinen.
Yeah, watch the game that just took place.
I mean, he's at best a backup at the NHL level. And I realize,
$4.5 million.
Trading Cam Talbot for Anthony Stolarz. I like Anthony Stolarz, but he hasn't proven that he's a backup. He's a young goaltender. I mean, he's still in his early 20s, but the Oilers still need to find a number one goaltender, and they still need to find a number one defenseman.
It's interesting. I mean, that brings up another question. I mean, if you bring in a brand new GM from outside the organization, are you almost committing to a rebuild? Because along with the roster, GMs bring their own assistant general managers, their own pro scouts, their own minor league coaches, their own development coaches. So a lot of changes transpire when you switch GMs. It's almost admitting that our entire organization is somewhat flawed and we need to start from scratch again, which some could argue the Oilers is.
And the only certainty right now is that this GM search has just started, right? Or it started, you know, since Peter Chiarelli was fired, but there's a long way to go before we're going to know who the permanent GM of the Oilers is going to be. It's most likely not going to be until after the playoffs are over, especially if they really are after a guy like Kelly McCrimmon, current assistant general manager with the Vegas Golden Knights. So it's going to be interesting, a very fascinating team to follow. The Oilers are not going to make the playoffs, especially after tonight's embarrassing 6-3 loss to the New Jersey Devils, but this is a team that is without a permanent general manager right now. It could be Keith Gretzky, but a lot of people think that this Oilers team has to go outside the organization and bring in some new blood. We're going to head to break. We have one final segment to go. We're going to talk about Steven Stamkos' comments about the NHL playoff format, and then we're going to do a quick out-of-town scoreboard update. There were only three games in the NHL. We talked about the Devils-Oilers game, but we'll update you on those other two games that were played tonight. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the O'Legal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN 1290.ca.
I think from a perspective of what you're grinding 82 games for during a season is to finish as high as you can so you can have that advantage come playoffs. So I don't think that's an advantage to Toronto or Boston to be, you know, what could be the top three teams in the whole league from one division and then have to play that team in the first round. I don't think that's right. In saying that, you saw what Pitt and Wash had to deal with for the last couple of years. I mean, it is what it is. You can't change it now, but I don't think it's the most fair in terms of why you play and, you know, the advantage you're supposed to have come playoff time.
Steven Stamkos of the first place Tampa Bay Lightning doesn't love the NHL playoff format, even though the Lightning are leading their division and the entire league. I love that honesty from Steven Stamkos. Welcome back. Final segment of NHL This Week on TSN Radio 1290. Ezra Ginsberg and Sean Assor. Programming note, we're actually not going to be on live next week. The Winnipeg Jets are playing on the road, so we're going to be back the following week, 2 weeks from now. But of course, we'll be back this Saturday, for a Winnipeg Jets game day edition. Jets and Flames play Saturday night. We'll be back for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Before we get back to those Steven Stamkos comments, let's do a quick scoreboard update. Only three games tonight. We talked about the New Jersey Devils defeated the Edmonton Oilers by a score of 6-3. Vancouver Canucks defeated the New York Rangers 4-1. And the Chicago Blackhawks, after being up 5-0 on the Toronto Maple Leafs, they end up winning that game 5-4. The Leafs score four unanswered goals, including Austin Matthews, 32nd of the year, and Johnny Tavares, 39, one goal away from 40 goals on the season. But that's a crippling loss for the Toronto Maple Leafs, who have really been struggling as of late. Sean, I want to get your take on Stammer's comments, because, you know, it was really unexpected to hear Steven Stamkos, because the Lightning, as we talked about, they're in first place. Nobody's even close to them. They're going to get a very favorable matchup in the first round. The Toronto Maple Leafs and the Boston Bruins are not. They're going to play for the second year in a row in the first round. But when you heard Stamkos' comments, what did you think of?
I thought, wow, that's so nice of him to be concerned about the Bruins and the Maple Leafs and who they get to play. But no, I mean, I get it. It's he talks about the grind of the 82 season and why they do it. And I mean, would you like to see the 1v8? 2v7 reseed after the first round, maybe, but I mean, we've seen some incredible playoff matches based on this format. It does breed rivalries. It really does. I respectfully disagree, but I understand where he's coming from.
And Tampa Bay Lightning head coach John Cooper disagreed a little bit with Steven Stamkos. This is what he said. The first round is a pretty dynamic round. You're going to have to go through everybody anyways. It is unfortunate that some teams are not going to last. Some say it would be great if these teams met later, but it's pretty cool that these teams meet in the first place, no matter the round. So some people love the playoff format. Some people just live with it. And then other people like Steven Stamkos don't really like it. That's it for tonight's NHL This Week. Big thanks to our guest, Jeff Baker of the Seattle Times, Dennis Bernstein of the Fourth Period, and Ryan Wallace of the Vegas Golden Knights Insider Show. As we mentioned, NHL This Week off next week, but we'll be back on Saturday morning with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Big thanks for listening. Have a good night.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN 1290.ca.